Hitler's telephone, and Torak's horse, the trade in genuine and counterfeit Nazi paraphernalia. Every few years, a painter by the name of Hitler enjoys a surge in demand in the German art market. That's when auction houses, primarily in southern Germany, offer oil paintings, drawings, and watercolors, ostensibly originals by the dictator, and overwhelmingly from the time that he made hand-painted postcards to try to keep his head above water. Views of historical buildings in and around Vienna. Plazas, churches, buildings, and landscapes. It's solid artistic handiwork that portrays its themes half-naturalistically, with a true perspective and muted colors that wouldn't disturb the harmony of a bourgeois living room. They are souvenir pictures, like the ones produced industrially on postcards today. But there's a catch. Almost everything on the market today bearing the signature of the greatest mass murderer of all time is presumably fake. That's why, for years, law enforcement agencies have systematically seized these supposed artworks in advance of the auctions, not because of the alleged artist. Hitler's works may be freely sold in Germany, as long as they don't contain symbols such as the swastika or the double S Armenen runes of the Schutzstaffel, both of which violate the German Constitution's prohibition of certain organizations. For the police, there's a different problem. The works of art usually carry a forged signature, even if they are accompanied by extremely impressive expert opinions, and thus constitute the criminal offenses of falsification of documents and fraud. In Nuremberg, officially designated the city of Nazi Party rallies in 1933, the Weidler auction house, which has offered works by Adolf Hitler several times in the past 15 years, learned from experience. When an oil painting of a mountain in southern Bavaria that was ascribed to Hitler with the title Der Hohe Göll was auctioned, the city administration tried to block the sale in court. Because the landscape didn't contain any symbols forbidden by the Constitution, the efforts failed. The Nuremberg City legal director, Hartmut Frommer, told press agencies at the time, "Basically, we find it repugnant that Nuremberg should become known as a place where Hitler memorabilia are auctioned." The spokesperson for the Jewish community had a decidedly more relaxed response, commenting succinctly that the sale was not an attack, and he didn't care what they did with the junk. The pictures, like Hitler himself, belonged to the garbage heap of history. There was hardly any reaction in September 2009 when the same place offered for sale four works on paper supposedly with Hitler's signature, among them Bullet-Riddled Mill and a view of the White Church in the Wachau Valley. Without any evil background. That changed, however, in 2019 when Weidler announced a special auction, Adolf Hitler, which included the sale of 31 works on paper from 1909 to 1936. Shortly before the strange event, the police seized these works along with others ascribed to Hitler. An expert had expressed doubt about their authenticity, suspecting fraud. Just 3 weeks earlier, the state criminal police in Berlin had confiscated four works on paper that Hitler allegedly created. A spokesperson for the auction house in Nuremberg, which cooperated with the authorities, was quoted in the German magazine Der Spiegel, saying that she was not concerned that the auction would attract extreme white nationalist buyers. The interested parties are international art collectors without any evil background. It was pointed out that museums made money with Nazi art. In fact, the buyers of such memorabilia come principally from the Arab world, but also increasingly from China, South America, and time and again from Germany itself, where there is a very active scene among collectors of military and Hitler memorabilia. To obtain supposedly valuable pieces, they are sometimes not above resorting to illegal means. The trade in Nazi relics, Hitler's alleged drawings and watercolors, the pompous statues that Nazis favored to decorate their public buildings, rarely takes place in the official art market, through registered auction houses, galleries, and retail establishments. With the promise of anonymity, an antiques dealer in northern Germany said of his contacts and clients, "Most of it is sold on the telephone or through the internet. I know who's interested in what, and I know what's coming on the market. For most pieces, the sale happens quickly. There's a big demand, and naturally the number of important pieces available for sale gets smaller and smaller. The market isn't limited to supposed works by Hitler, but extends to all kinds of relics from the Nazi period. Much of it comes from estate sales. They say, "I found something that the children shouldn't see." Many collectors fly under the radar because no one is supposed to own this kind of thing now. They have a bad conscience if they say that they are interested in this stuff. People contaminated by ideology who aren't even really collectors, who are idiots, in fact, have brought a whole area of collecting into disrepute. They would just as soon paint a swastika on a German army steel helmet themselves. Scholarly interest. The market for what is deceptively referred to as militaria, or military antiques, is enormous. That can be seen in the collectors' exchanges that take place regularly in Alsace, Belgium, the Netherlands, and the Czech Republic, as well as in Germany. At these events, dozens of dealers offer for sale medals, badges, books, knives, firearms, armament equipment, documents, photographs, uniforms, and other military surplus, especially from the so-called Third Reich. When you go to one of these events in Germany, you see vehicles from all over the country, but also from the Benelux countries and France. In one of the rooms inside, a thick-set man shouts in Russian into a red telephone. At a booth downstairs, two men discuss the scriptures that they say drove the American re-education campaign after 1945 in occupied Germany. "It's there, right at the beginning. Our triumphal march began on Mount Sinai." "Oh, that was a Jew who wrote that? They were smart people." Both laugh knowingly. An international book dealer offers titles such as Airfields of the Luftwaffe, 1934 to 1945, monographs on German tanks, awardees of the Knight's Cross, and leaders of SS brigades, and gorgets and breastplates in the Third Reich. In a display case further in, there's a Federal Cross of Service. In another display case, oval stickers with the letter D for Deutschland on the background of the Nazi colors red, black, and white are for sale. These trade fairs are usually billed as events for experts that supposedly contribute to education and research. A scholarly purpose is difficult to discern, however. There are no lectures planned. It's still difficult to file complaints legally about these commercial events under current law. The dealers use tape to cover up the symbols that are forbidden by the Constitution because of their association with prohibited organizations. Ridiculous forgeries. For the collectors of these questionable relics, there's obviously no price too high, nor story too absurd, that it couldn't serve as proof of the authenticity of the object offered for sale. The American auction house, Alexander Historical Auctions in Chesapeake City, Maryland, auctioned a red telephone with an engraving of the Imperial Eagle, a swastika, and lettering that spelled Adolf Hitler. It was claimed that a Russian officer had given the device to Brigadier Sir Ralph Rayner in 1945 when he visited the so-called Führer Bunker in Berlin, and his son was now selling it at auction with an estimated price between $200,000 to $300,000. Indeed, the base of the telephone had been manufactured by the German firm Siemens & Halske, but the red handset was made in England. It's also highly improbable that Hitler would have had a badly lacquered black telephone instead of one made of red synthetic material. "That's obviously fake," opined Frank Genigel, director of the collection of the Museum of Communication in Frankfurt. Nonetheless, an unidentified buyer paid $243,000 for it. Then there are the triangular lapel pins with SS runes, and the word Lebensborn in Fraktur typeface, favored by the Nazis. With a price of $1,295, they were advertised as very rare on the website of the U.S. firm Ruptured Duck, which specializes in Nazi memorabilia. An expert in Switzerland who has publicized fake military memorabilia and works under the pseudonym Joe Rivette points out that a secretive SS club would not have distributed membership badges to be worn in public. He has since published a book on the forgery of Nazi Party badges. A German antiques dealer, who hardly deals in militaria anymore, claims that the forgery of such military insignia began immediately after the war. Good copies came from Israel, and nowadays they also come from Poland, where they are sold to tourists who visit Hitler's Führerhauptquartier Wolfschanze in East Prussia, and from Idar Oberstein. Moreover, he said that the firms that actually supplied the Nazi regime with medals and badges continued to manufacture them after the war. Many wanted to buy back what the Allies had taken from them, or what they had themselves been careful to destroy or throw away. A lot of them were swindled with fakes. This theory was confirmed in 2017 with the announcement of the discovery of 80 supposedly important Nazi relics. The German tabloid Bild immediately trumpeted the discovery of Hitler's silver treasures. A raid on an antiques dealer not far from Buenos Aires turned up a Nazi dagger with a swastika, metal busts of Hitler, imperial eagles, and a device for measuring skulls and magnifying glasses that Hitler himself is supposed to have used. Various theories circulated about their provenance. Nazis fleeing to South America were supposed to have transported these pieces, among the most absurd of which was a piggy bank in the shape of a cat with a swastika on a ribbon around its neck. The concentration camp doctor Josef Mengele, or the Holocaust organizer Adolf Eichmann, could have played a role, it was said. The Argentine Minister of Security and the Chief of the Federal Police announced that the pieces would be transferred to the State Holocaust Museum. The director of that institution proclaimed at the press conference that a selection of the objects would be displayed there. But even Argentina's Holocaust Museum had been deceived, blinded by the name Hitler. In the spring of 2018, a group of experts that included employees of the Bundeskriminalamt and the Central Institute for Art History in Munich, Zentralinstitut für Kunstgeschichte, or ZI, had determined in a visit to Buenos Aires that the knickknacks were not authentic. Sometimes the swastika was added later on. Sometimes historical events were invented. For example, references to an agricultural fair in Berlin in 1937 that seems not to have taken place. There had been no 1942 Erster Prize, with its confused mingling of German and English, as claimed on a small statuette. The little box with the magnifying glasses that allegedly belonged to Hitler, according to Stefan Klingen of ZI, has the wrong imperial eagle on the top. Our expert opinion was unambiguous. The matter was seen quite differently in Argentina. There, the authorities and the Holocaust Museum continued to claim that the trove of Nazi treasures was authentic, and to the consternation of the German experts, expressly referred to the expert opinions of the BKA and ZI. Headlines with the word Nazi in them practically guaranteed a huge visitor turnout. A Nazi museum under the Baltic Sea. Although the extent of the trade in Nazi memorabilia, much of it forged, has long been known, investigators from the art division of the Berlin State Criminal Office were still shocked when in May 2015 they stumbled upon a gigantic private museum of Nazi relics in the very northernmost part of Germany. Behind the inconspicuous and somewhat conventional-looking facade of his property, Klaus Dieter F. had, for the course of many years, put together an impressive collection of curiosities from the Nazi period. As the detective superintendent René Allange summarized the investigation in the professional magazine Der Kriminalist, the house harbored not only one-of-a-kind items from the possessions of the former commander-in-chief of the German Air Force, Hermann Göring, but also unique pieces from the estate of Fleet Admiral Karl Dönitz. The secrets of the home revealed themselves to the task force in the cellar of the house in the form of numerous passageways that stretched across several floors and were barred in part by massive floodgate-style doors weighing tons. Hundreds of mannequins dressed in uniforms from the Nazi period breathed life into the labyrinth. To the shocked onlookers, it was as if time had stood still around 1940. Over the course of years, undetected by the outside world, F. had constructed exact copies of interiors in the Nazi style, with astonishing precision and an exacting eye for detail, inspired by historical building plans and hewing as close to the original as possible. The private Nazi museum stretched for hundreds of square meters, allegedly even partly underneath the waters of the Baltic Sea. The property could be reached only by a one-way, dead-end street. On a wall there hung an enamel sign with the imperial eagle and the colonial designation German Territory. More imperial eagles and enormous swastika flags adorned the walls of the cellar. In vitrines lay collector's pieces, such as medals and decorations, letters and correspondence, artworks, part of the estate of Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, a baptismal cup that had belonged to Göring and had been auctioned by the state of Bavaria in 1966, furniture, entire antique cars and boats, a piano which had belonged to one of the architects of the Holocaust, Reinhard Heydrich, and had supposedly been smuggled out of Prague, stood in one room. In the garden stood Arno Breker's monumental sculpture, Swordsman, the Army, from 1939. It took their breath away when in one of the enormous underground rooms the investigators found, in addition to several torpedoes and parts of the legendary V-1 rocket, a complete Army Panzer tank and an 88mm air defense cannon. Of course, the owner reassured them that they had been demilitarized, i.e. rendered unusable. The police didn't want to rely on that representation and suspected a violation of the law regarding the possession of military weapons. When, 2 months later, the 45-ton tank was hauled out of its underground housing and into daylight with the help of a special battalion from the German army in Husum in a 9-hour operation, the neighbors couldn't understand the reason. They told the many journalists present that it was well known that F. had owned the Panzer. Years earlier, he had used it to clear snow from the streets in wintertime. The investigators didn't find what they were actually looking for in the far-flung cabinet of curiosities. To be sure, the basement in Kiel housed a replica of the German Chancellery in Berlin, but the police had been hoping to locate, among other things, two original bronze horses weighing tons that had stood in the garden of Hitler's government headquarters. Even before the wall fell, it was known that these monstrous, exaggerated sculptures by Hitler's favorite sculptor, Josef Torak, and four other sculptures by Arno Breker and Fritz Klimsch, still existed, at least until 1989. The art historian Magdalena Bushart had written about it in spring 1989, just before the beginning of the end of the German Democratic Republic, or DDR, in the German newspaper Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, and reconstructed the path these gigantic stallions had taken since the end of the war. For fear that they would be damaged, the government had warehoused them in Wriezen, in Brandenburg. There, Hitler had given his second favorite sculptor, Arno Breker, the manor house and Junker's estate, Jekelsbruck, and expanded it in 1940 with a railroad connection and canal port for the grand new studio for the workshop of stone sculptor Arno Breker, LLC, as part of the Albert Speer architectural plans for expression of Nazism. In 1944, Torak's horses found a new barn here. After the end of the war, the Red Army transferred the horses, along with the sculptures by Breker and Klimsch, to the sports field for one of their barracks in Eberswalde, 20 kilometers away. A group of criminals in East and West Germany knew what collectors in the West were willing to pay for Nazi relics like the Torak horses. They understood the subtext of Bushart's reporting to be a hint that they had to act fast if they wanted to cash in on the Nazi sculptures. When an informant told the Berlin criminal police in the fall of 2013 that someone had offered to sell her the sculptures, the investigation began. Ownership rights to the artworks, property of the former German Democratic Republic, had been transferred to the Federal Republic of Germany under the Unification Treaty. Whoever dealt with them, acquired them, or hid them could be prosecuted for theft or receiving stolen goods. At the end of the investigations, there were not only raids in several places in Germany, among them Heikendorf, near Kiel, and criminal penalties, but also the story of an ingenious art smuggling scheme between the two Germanies just before the wall fell. Eberswalde, Wilmersdorf, Bad Dürkheim. Curious visitors to the barracks in Eberswalde, about 50 kilometers northeast of Berlin, who had gotten wind of Torak's horses from the news article in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, were told before the German Democratic Republic ended that the sculptures were turned into scrap metal in order to help the victims of earthquakes in Armenia. In fact, as the police reconstructed it 25 years later, the article in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung brought the horses in the Eberswalde barracks to the attention of the businessman Rainer W. in Bad Dürkheim, who ran a business that specialized in engine technology and was one of the largest employers in the Palatinate region of southwest Germany. He turned to Helmut S., a businessman in Aachen, who officially exported and imported vintage cars, but in fact also regularly found collector's pieces from the Nazi period and military vehicles. One of his best customers was Rainer W., born 1941, who collected relics from that period with similar enthusiasm and similar financial investment to that of Klaus Dieter F. René Allange and his co-workers reconstructed the sequence as follows. S. took advantage of his contacts to the East Berlin firm Interport, a team of specialists led by the Stasi, state security chief, Helmut Gietl, to smuggle goods from the West that were under embargo by the German Democratic Republic, disguised as the trade in vintage cars. With the help of middlemen, especially Peter S., a vintage car dealer living in Belgium, and six-figure payoffs, they were able to bribe the responsible Russian officers and allegedly also a general major in the National Defense Council of the German Democratic Republic, who had the best contacts with the Russians. And they agreed on the cover story of aid to the Armenian earthquake victims. One of the Russian generals involved lives today in Belarus. Two brothers in the junk business picked up the sculptures by Torak, Breker, and Klimsch in 1989 in Eberswalde. The Russians lent a crane to help with loading them up, and transported the artworks on two trucks, first to a barn in Fehlefanz, north of Berlin. Because the bronzes, weighing tons, couldn't be transported to the West as complete objects, W and S decided to cut them up into pieces. They were declared as non-ferrous metal scrap and loaded onto trucks along with other junk without looking suspicious. The important parts, like the heads, hooves, hands, and feet, were first kept by a lover of Helmut S. under wool blankets in her bedroom in a nondescript apartment building in East Berlin. The pieces were brought to the West by drivers of the State Interhotel Group, who regularly picked up guests at Tegel Airport in the West, and in exchange for a bribe of 1,000 Deutschmarks, would transport the pieces to the West in the trunks of their cars. After being stored at a dealership for camper trailers in Wilmersdorf in West Berlin, an attorney friend of Helmut S. smuggled them into West Germany proper, in a camper trailer over the special highway corridor across East Germany that linked West Berlin to West Germany. The individual pieces were brought together in a shed near Mainz that belonged to Rainer W., welded back together, and coated with a new patina. Helmut S. estimated to the German magazine Der Spiegel that the smuggling operation and the restoration of the six sculptures had cost W. between 500,000 Deutschmarks and 700,000 Deutschmarks. At some point, their new owner wanted to unload the horses. He offered to sell them more or less discreetly in collector's circles with photographs and documentation. That's how an informant of the Berlin State Criminal Police and private Dutch art hunter Arthur Brandt both learned that the Torak bronzes were apparently still in West Berlin. Meanwhile, Brandt had also been offered works by Arno Breker that similarly had once been located in Eberswalde. Appointments to see the works in southern Germany and near Frankfurt didn't materialize. The search grew difficult as sketchy middlemen intervened in order to take a cut of the profits, although they themselves obviously didn't know where the horses were to be found. Then it became known that since the 1990s, two of the Breker bronzes, the Prophet and the Vocation, had stood in the garden of the private Breker Museum belonging to the publisher Joe F. Bodenstein in Nervenich, in the west-central German area known as the Nordheifel. Moreover, Bodenstein was involved in a lawsuit with Reiner W. It could be gleaned from the court documents in the proceeding that W. had loaned the colossal Breaker sculptures to Bodenstein in 1993. That was the first time that the businessman's name had turned up in connection with the sculptures from Eberswalde. And what was more, Bodenstein argued in his court pleadings that his opponent could not demand the return of the works and could maintain no title in them because he had illegally transported the bronzes out of the then German Democratic Republic at the time of the reunification of the two Germanies. The two sculptures were first returned to W. in 2012 in the context of a legal settlement. At the same time, the investigators kept hearing the name of Klaus Dieter F. Aerial photography revealed large sculptures in the garden of his estate in Heikendorf. Besides, as the investigator René Allange said, the businessman was known in the scene to be a collector of Nazi relics and a discreet subscriber to neo-Nazi publications. Indeed, W. had given F. the Torak horses in 1996 as security for a loan in the amount of 300,000 Deutschmarks. F. kept them hidden from prying eyes in his well-guarded garden. When the loan was repaid, the sculptures, which weighed tons, were picked up by a trucking service at night, so no one could see anything. Legally acquired. The Berlin art investigators finally found the Torak horses in May 2015 in a shed in Bad Dürkheim. Only after they had explained the possible consequences of his actions to an initially uncooperative Reiner W., hidden under tarpaulins, they also found both missing bronze sculptures by Arno Breaker, as well as some stone reliefs that the sculptor had begun as part of the transformation of Berlin into Germania. The two Klimt sculptors, Galathea and Olympia, which also came from Eberswalde, stood in the garden of W.'s spacious estate. W.'s lawyer responded to questions regarding his client's supposedly driving the Panzer around town and possibly political inclinations by issuing a general press release. His client had legally acquired the sculptures 25 years ago from the Russian army and the earlier fabricators. Furthermore, artworks that he had owned had been exhibited in Nürnberg for 20 years. The museum, however, made clear that at the request of the artist's widow, Charlotte Breaker, only the two bronzes, the Prophet and the Calling, were to be placed there. Mr. W. withdrew the loan in the end, according to hearsay, to pursue commercial interests. In fact, despite his entanglement in the tyrannical Nazi regime, Breaker's works have a high market value. A few years ago, the bronze cast of a decathlete from a mold made in 1935-36 for the Olympic Games was sold at the auction house Schloss Alden for 125,000 euros. This casting had been acquired by a private collector directly from the artist in 1989. Meanwhile, the statute of limitations on crimes in connection with the Nazi sculptures from Eberswalde has run out. Ownership is still being worked out. Surprisingly, and contrary to what was assumed at first, Schalk Golodowski's state institution to accumulate hard currency was not involved in this case. As the detective chief superintendent René Allange summarized his findings in the matter, in the end it was the employees of the consortium he ran, the East German authorities, and corrupt Russian officers who were lining their own pockets and enabled the smuggling of the Eberswalde sculptures from east to west in the first place. For the Berlin investigators, it gave them insights into a nasty subculture in which extremist sentiments and passionate collecting go together. Allegedly, the so-called flag of blood of the Nazi Party, the flag with a swastika that the National Socialists carried with them at the attempted Hitler coup against the Democratic German federal government in November 1923, which was used to consecrate all Nazi Party flags and standards of the SA and SS units from 1926 on, may be found today in the possession of a collector in northern Germany. From Safecracker to Auctioneer. If one examines the databanks to see, for example, where Nazi art by Torak is auctioned today, the name of a certain auction house pops up again and again. A house that once was highly respected, which used to be located in Munich, and today is found in Grasbrunn, dealing in so-called militaria and knight's armor, swords, arts and crafts, and antiques, the house of Hermann Historica. A bust of Rudolf Hess was sold there in May 2012 for 7,500 euros. 2 years earlier, the house sold a monumental carved marble head of Fritz Todt, the builder of Germany's interstate system under the Nazis, and imperial minister for armament and munitions for 6,300 euros. Along with the Berlin Auction House for History and Military Antiques Limited Partnership, Helmut Weitze, in Hamburg, Hermann Historica is one of the most important auction houses in Germany for the trade in Nazi relics, according to research by the Dutch journalist Bart F.M. Droch. The house has an interesting history. It was founded by a safecracker who had been adopted by a titled aristocrat. The aristocrat's wife and son carried on the business, and in the 1960s, the Count Kleinau General Partnership seems to have begun Nazi auctions. In 1978, the weekly newspaper Die Zeit called the business the best-known wholesale market in Nazi souvenirs in West Germany. Even then, all that glittered wasn't authentic Nazi brown. The run in Nazi relics, which caused a doubling of transactions, also caused an increase in the number of forgeries. For example, in April 1971, Count Kleinau offered 56 pieces allegedly from Hitler's Munich housekeeper, Annie Winter, for sale in a high-visibility special auction. The catalog featured, among other things, a Christmas card and a draft of a speech by Hitler, his German Automobile Club membership card, his briefcase, and his collar buttons. Bart F.M. Droch discovered that the apparently thievish housekeeper, who had fled from the approaching American military with two big suitcases in April 1945, had been arrested and permitted to keep only 10 items. Where the remaining 46 pieces of memorabilia on sale might have come from is just as questionable as their certificates of authenticity. In 1982, Wolfgang Hermann and Ernst Ludwig Wagner took over what had been renamed Count Kleinau and Son General Partnership and rechristened it Hermann Historica. Today, if one visits the firm's website to view the items on offer, one has to first enter a password. Hermann Historica claims to deal in historical objects only under the strictest standards with museums, archives, and serious collectors. It asserts that providing museums and collections the opportunity to acquire historical documentation is indispensable and important work that offers a better understanding of history and thereby helps assure that something similar cannot happen again. Supposedly, a taboo on this area would only lead to an opaque market. The offerings include medieval helmets and swords, Japanese samurai armor, and assorted arts and crafts. Similar arguments are put forward by other auction houses that enjoy a profitable business in Nazism. For example, the Landshut Armory, in its catalog Antique Weapons and Armor, Military Memorabilia and Medals, offers as historical objects 1933-45 such items as signed photographs of Hitler, National Socialist Democrat Workers' Party of Germany, NSDAP or Nazi badges, release papers from the Sachsenburg concentration camp, and a desk-sized bust of Imperial Chancellor Adolf Hitler on a marble base. Approximately half of the 117 lots offered in September 2019 were alleged to come from the Nazi period. The firm defended its offering in the text of the catalog. As long as those in possession of the catalog and sellers and participants in the auction do not indicate otherwise, they affirm that the catalog and the objects from the period 1933-45 that are included and pictured in it are acquired only for purposes of civic enlightenment, the defense against efforts contrary to the Constitution, for academic study, or reporting on contemporary events. Penal Code, paragraphs 86A. Similar terms are found in the rules of most of the relevant dealers and auction houses. Whether anybody in his free time reports on happenings and current events or conducts military or historical research cannot be seriously investigated. Everything seems to pass muster with the responsible government agencies as long as the swastika is taped over before the sale. Nobody knows what happens afterwards with the object. Nor can anyone explain what historical understanding is facilitated by Hitler's brown shirt and his cap, with a pronounced forward visor for protection from bright lights, which the auction house Thies in Nürtingen, Germany, offered for sale in 2019, the shirt for 600,000 euros, and the cap, whose whereabouts, like those of the shirt, had been traced continuously back to 1945, for 400,000 euros. Both objects were supposed to have belonged to the extensive collection of First Lieutenant Philip Ben Lieber, a Jewish U.S. officer from Louisiana, who together with two other soldiers was said to be the first to enter Hitler's home in Munich at Prinzregentenplatz 16. One of the objects allegedly taken then was a porcelain shaving cup with gold feet and a portrait of Hitler on the front. Counterfeited counterfeits. In Nuremberg, Germany, where supposed Hitler works are regularly offered for sale, and where such items were seized in 2019, the connoisseur of Nazi relics isn't made to do without. A tablecloth that had not been seized, and that allegedly came from a guest house at Hitler's Bavarian mountain retreat, the Gästehaus Platterhof in Obersalzburg, went for 630 euros at the auction table. A resplendent Meissen vase with a depiction of a swastika flag and a Nazi-era ship, the Goch Fock, named after an author favored by the Nazis, which was supposedly seized by Russian soldiers from Hitler's private rooms in the Berlin Imperial Chancellery, took in 5,500 euros. A wicker chair from the country house Wackenfeld, which was converted into the Berghof, in the Führer-restricted zone above Berchtesgaden, Hitler's second seat of government, which the dictator is supposed to have given to his veterinarian, Karl Reismann, for his many years of service, was withdrawn from auction out of caution, with respect to the relevant guidelines. The swastikas on the armrests could be considered part of historical documentation only with extreme difficulty. The pieces offered for sale in Nuremberg may be used only for purposes of civic enlightenment, the defense against efforts contrary to the Constitution, for academic study, or reporting on contemporary events. Penal Code paragraphs 86-86A, as the auction house explained in the catalog pursuant to the code. That should also apply to a supposed 1929 watercolor nude signed A. Hitler of his niece and alleged lover, Gaily Raubal, which carried a price estimate of 3,500 euros. Some things suggest that Konrad Kujau, the legendary forger who sold the phony Hitler diaries to the German magazine Der Stern, is responsible for this last item. He owns a variation of it himself, confirmed Mark Oliver Boger. He founded the Kujau Cabinet in Bietigheim-Bissingen and has documented the work of this forger. Kujau started in the 1960s painting battle scenes for old comrades. As his customers kept asking him for things from Hitler, Kujau finally altered his handwriting to resemble Hitler's at the appropriate age and manufactured the desired items. Already back then, he was getting 2,500 Deutschmarks for a quickly penned letter. The respected historian Eberhard Jeckel was even taken in by some of the forgeries. In the 1970s, Kujau created his first Hitler drawings in watercolors. In those years, he was the man who could get anything, Boger recalled. And he had originals, too. When the demand exceeded the supply, he produced what was needed to make up the difference. Not only from the Nazi period. To sell a snuff box he claimed had been owned by Friedrich the Great of Germany, he forged the king's signature. Boger says that he knows that the publisher of Der Stern, Gruner and Jahr, acquired not only the forged diaries, but also assorted autographs, an alleged first draft of the Constitution of the Russian government, and a copy of the founding document of the Socialist Unity Party of Germany, which governed East Germany. His brother was allegedly a general in East Germany and had collected the documents, Kujau told buyers in Hamburg. On the back of the variant picture of Gaily Raubal, Kuyao wrote in his Hitler handwriting, Gailey sat for me as a model for 20 hours. Picture remains in my Munich home, said Mark Oliver Boger. That was typical of Kuyao. He often made mistakes, like using an inconsistent variant of the letter S in a supposed Hitler letter. In fact, on a Hitler diary that he had forged, he attached the letters FH instead of AH. Even today, Kuyao's works present problems, said Boger. Meanwhile, he's being forged himself. In the exhibition, we have a whole display case full of it. A man who lives on Lake Constance regularly offers fake Kuyaos on eBay. Other forgers have sought out old people who can still command the Zutterlin handwriting style. For a small fee, they fill out blank identity cards with the information of prominent Nazis. With the aid of these documents, great quantities of uniform fragments, knives, medals, and other pieces may be sold with the story that they came from this owner. They are then brought to the appropriate auctions, said Boger, and need not be sold there necessarily. It suffices if they are pictured in the catalog with the false history. That way they are sanitized for the collector's market and can then be sold afterwards, oftentimes at still higher prices. Hitler and Snow White. The cult around Hitler as a putative artist has meanwhile produced some strange fruits. In 2008, for example, when the Norwegian museum director William Hakvag claimed to have discovered in the Lofoten Islands of southwest Norway a packet of 4 cartoon drawings inside the frame on the back side of a Hitler painting. Because the Führer was quite fond of Disney cartoons, according to the story of their discovery, he drew Pinocchio and 3 of the 7 dwarves, painting them with watercolor. Of course, 3 of the 4 pages bear his initials. He was absolutely sure that the works came from Hitler, Hakvag assured the news agency Reuters. No one would put forgeries on the back of a picture where they might never be discovered. The museum director bought the picture at auction in Germany for the equivalent of $300. He claimed that the signature matched the handwriting of the initials on the drawings. Hitler owned a copy of Snow White. He thought it was one of the best films ever made. And finally, it was an adaptation of a fairy tale that's about as German as can be. In fact, Hitler had a strong affinity for Disney cartoons. His biographer, Ian Kershaw, recalled that propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels gave Hitler 30 U.S. movies as a Christmas present in 1937, among them 18 Mickey Mouse films. They couldn't be shown in Germany at the time. 1 year later, Walt Disney's brother Roy presented a copy of Snow White personally to the propaganda ministry. The cartoon film Pinocchio premiered, however, on February 7, 1940. So a year and a half before that, as he masterminded the World War, Hitler was supposed to have been entertaining himself by drawing the figures of Pinocchio and Doc, Sleepy and Dopey. That's not very likely. In Belgium in the 1980s, 21 drawings surfaced, which supposedly a newly released Adolf Hitler, who had been stationed in Flanders during the First World War, had forgotten and left behind, in the attic loft of a farm. The drawings were sold for £115, or about 170 euros, at auction in September 2006 by the modest auction house Jeffreys in the provincial city of Lostwithiel in Cornwall. Collectors from Great Britain, Germany, Japan, Russia, New Zealand, South Africa, and Eastern Europe expressed an interest. 2 years later, the British artists and brother duo Jake and Dinos Chapman claimed to have acquired Hitler works on various occasions and to have painted over them with stars, rainbows, and hearts. The grouping was presented as their own work in the exhibition If Hitler Had Been a Hippie, How Happy Would We Be? Price €872,000. Allegedly, their gallerist made sure that no Nazi sympathizers would buy the reworked Hitler pieces. Having asked the artists in vain for documentation of the origin of the purported works by Hitler, Bart F.M. Druch doesn't believe their story. The Chapman Hitlers came from the controversial American Militaria dealer Charles E. Snyder, who has a reputation for selling fakes. The refusal to answer causes us to have some misgivings about the Hitlers that the Chapman brothers are said to have used. Lenin and Hitler playing chess. Great Britain, where TV comedies featuring caricatures of simpleton Nazi soldiers still draw big audiences, is a center for the trade in purported Hitler relics. In May 1960, the revered auction house Sotheby's included two watercolors by Hitler in an auction called Important Impressionist and Modern Drawings, Paintings, and Sculptures. In the catalog, Hitler's pictures of the Parliament and the St. Charles Church in Vienna were reproduced and presented in the same way as works by Picasso, Renoir, and Toulouse-Lautrec. The seller was a Viennese industrialist by the name of Monica Fischer, who could even prove the authenticity of the works on paper. Correspondence demonstrating that a Hungarian furniture manufacturer had acquired them in 1912 was sold with the watercolors. Walter Lohmann, the Vienna correspondent for the Völkischer Beobachter, the Nazi newspaper, who was tasked by the Nazi Party with buying for its archives all the Hitler drawings that were still in private ownership, identified both drawings as early Hitler's. His attempt to purchase them was unsuccessful for reasons that are unknown. Hitler's photographer, Heinrich Hofmann, confirmed their authenticity as well. Among others, the London gallerist Jacques Ohanna protested against the sale. Hitler was an artist only of mass murder. A company that takes in £1 million in profit every year doesn't need this kind of publicity. His objection fell on deaf ears. A London antiques dealer bought the two pictures for a total of £600, 7,100 Deutschmarks at the time. He was working as a proxy for Sir Henry Frederick Thynne, the 6th Marquess of Bath, who commented later, "I bought the pictures because Hitler painted them. I know that they have practically no value, but then why do people buy pictures by Churchill?" The profits from the sale, as indicated by the auctioneer Peter Wilson at the start of the bidding, would go to the British Fund to aid global refugees. Surprisingly, since that auction by the eminent Sotheby's, the supply of such items in the UK has hardly dried up. The business has meanwhile relocated from the capital city to the provinces. For example, to Wall under Haywood in 2010. The mother of the artist in graphite, £6,000. A red chalk drawing of the muscular back of a young man, also £6,000. A watercolor showing two laborers in a smithy cost, however, twice as much. A swastika rises in the background from the fireplace of the smithy, and one of the men has a small mustache on his upper lip. The paper is signed at the bottom left, Adolf Hitler, 1929. These works on paper offered for sale by the British auction house Mullocks were, of course, also supposed Adolf Hitler originals. Alone in this single auction in the English Midlands, a total of 21 such works on paper were gaveled off. Total estimated price, £165,000. Most of them were supposed to have come from Hitler's early years in Vienna. His last failed attempt to get into the Academy of Art there. Once again, there was a catalog, and once more, the absurdity of the souvenirs cannot be exaggerated. Under number 382, for £40,000, an engraving by the Jewish painter Emma Löwenstam was sold that showed Hitler, supposedly with Lenin, who still sported a full head of hair, playing chess in Vienna in 1909. One lot later, there followed the wooden chess set itself that they supposedly used, naturally the original, with all the pieces intact, ennobled like the engraving, with an estimated sales price of £40,000. After all, that which is expensive must be genuine. By contrast, a red marbled tile from the floor of Hitler's workroom in the Imperial Chancellery, which a Russian soldier is said to have picked up during the storming of Berlin and carried home in his hand luggage, could be had for a more modest £10,000. Naturally, a certificate of authenticity would be included. In total, Mullocks has sold, according to research by the Dutchman Jaap van den Born and Bart F. M. Droch, who have time and again uncovered fake works, 84 alleged watercolors, oil paintings, pastels, and sketches by the dictator in 13 auctions between 2009 and 2019 alone. According to their research, the works sold are all fake, without exception, and both of them cite dubious experts such as Peter Jahn and the furniture restorer Hans O. A. Horvath, who repeatedly provide expert opinions verifying the authenticity of their purported originals. Expert opinions by Horvat, who once tried to have Hitler's niece, Geli Raubal, exhumed to prove a murder theory, are also cited by the Nuremberg auction house Weidler. State-ordered scarcity. The center of the trade in Nazi relics, apart from Great Britain and the U.S., is still Germany. The dead dictator makes money flow in the German art market even today. Hitler had tried to prevent precisely this during his lifetime. At some point or other, the greatest general of all time recognized that he wasn't a notable genius as a young artist. As his political significance expanded, he ordered his staff to confiscate all available drawings. On the one hand, he wanted to prevent his pictures from becoming objects for financial speculation, in light of what was already an expanding cult of fanaticism. On the other hand, as he styled himself a serious art collector, he was afraid of the derision of art experts to whom the very modest merits of his works would be obvious. The principal Nazi archive acquired around 50 paintings and drawings in the years before 1940. For about 2,000 Reichsmarks per work, according to the historian and journalist Sven Felix Kellerhoff, that was more than the average annual income in the Third Reich, the equivalent today of about 40,000 euros. Nonetheless, some owners refused, because they insanely inflated the value of the work, as shown in this letter from a Teresa Ressel from Vienna, dated July 1938. I beseech you for information regarding the whereabouts of both drawings, and would like to add that I am not willing to give the pictures to the buyers for the sum of 4,000 Reichsmarks. The Führer is worshipped by a people, 75 million humans. His very own drawings deserve, one would think, a corresponding price. Instead of money in exchange, I would rather have a single-family house and a suitable piece of land near Vienna. After appropriate pressure from the authorities, the woman, in the end, decided to sell. Only about 36 of the works secured in this way survived the Second World War. Reinhold Hanisch, Hitler's former friend and one of the most prolific forgers of Hitler relics, hoped to profit from this state-ordered shortage. The two had come to know each other in 1910 in a men's lodging house in Vienna, where Hanisch took over the marketing of Hitler's postcards. He knew Hitler's themes and style well. Born in Bohemia, Hanisch started trading in Hitler drawings, which he presumably had forged himself in the 1930s, and was eventually jailed several times. The supposed authenticity of the Hitler pictures had been confirmed by, among others, the painter Karl Leidenroth, who had also met him at the men's home. Hanisch, whose published memoirs are untrustworthy at various points, died in jail in 1937 under circumstances that are unclear. Despite Hitler's order to recall his own works, just in the last 10 years, drawings and watercolors that are supposedly Hitler originals have surfaced time and again, leading Sven Felix Kellerhoff to state that 98% of the works offered are fakes, often quite dilettantish efforts. The expert opinions for the alleged Hitler works have come for decades mostly from the same experts, who always refer to the same literature. For example, the 1984 list of works, published by the American multimillionaire and Hitler collector Billy F. Price, which no one takes seriously. Price himself had begun early on to collect supposed works by Hitler and had paid several experts to participate in the publication in order to increase the value of his own inventory. He and his two co-authors, Peter Jahn and August Prizak, falsely authenticate fakes by the Hitler forger Konrad Kujau, as well as by Hitler's contemporary Reinhold Hanisch. They exaggerate enormously the number of supposed works without any proof, and in turn they rely upon other dubious sources. Only 12 of the 725 works ascribed to Hitler in the book are taken to be authentic by respectable experts today. The former Nazi archive staff member Prizak, who privately wrote hundreds of expert opinions after the war for supposed works by Hitler, is also known to have been deceived dozens of times by Konrad Kujau, the forger of the so-called Hitler diaries. The Dutch author, Jaap van den Born, trapped one of the many other Hitler experts a few years ago by printing a so-so view of Vienna off the internet. He signed it himself with a felt-tipped pen, A. Hitler, and mailed a scan of it to the U.S. For $40, he received soon thereafter an affirmation by the forensic handwriting expert, Frank P. Garrow. The work had been carefully examined and compared with known authentic specimens. Conclusion? The signature was made by the hand of the German dictator, in his opinion. In 2019, the auction house in Nuremberg also cited Garrow for a series of works whose images were featured in the catalog for the planned auction, with price estimates between 130 euros and 45,000 euros.